Bobby Dylan ever played Skin the Cat.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Maniac with a Machete, a horror podcast. I'm your host, Jason Soto. Joining me is my friend, Rachel. Hi, Rachel. How are you doing this lovely evening?
I'm great, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. It was actually a very beautiful day outside. It was like almost 60 degrees after a week of it being like 20. So I was very happy.
Nice. Not quite as extreme here, but still a nice day.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. I went out, walked around with a mask over my face and gloves and trying very hard not to get a coronavirus.
Or any other virus, like the flu, the regular flu.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
Okay. Sure.
No, but yeah, it was gorgeous outside. So I went outside for a little bit and then did some YouTube stuff, and then I watched this movie. So it was a pretty fun-filled day. So programming note, we are two episodes away from finishing this podcast. We have two more movies to go after this. And I'm just going to say right now, one of them I'm totally dreading, and one of them I cannot wait for you to see.
I'm pretty sure I know which is which. It's pretty obvious.
And I kind of, and actually, in a weird way, I kind of want you to see like the bad one too, mainly because to see if we agree that it's terrible, because so far in the Nightmare series, we have not agreed on any of them. I think not even the first one we even disagreed on a little bit.
I just don't like it as much as other people. I respect it, but I don't love it like some people do.
And I think it's a really damn good movie. So I'm very curious, now I don't expect you to like, I don't know what your opinions are going to be on Freddy versus Jason. I got a feeling, but I might be wrong. My feelings don't often pave a correct path. So,
all right.
So for all I know, I'm going to be way off and you'll be like, it was the best one ever. My God, why are we ending on this note? But tonight, we are going to get super ultra meta to the point where we should have had our friend Nick Jobe on because he's like the meta king.
I always think of Nick when I see something meta.
Yeah, same. So we're going to take a trip to 1994, which Rachel reminded me was 28 years ago.
Six
years ago, which is crazy because 1994 was my first year of high school. And
really?
It's crazy to think that I started high school 26 years ago. That's really fucking weird.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So
my 20 year high school reunion was last year. I didn't go. Fuck those fuckers. But it's still very strange.
I didn't go to any of my reunions either because I wasn't really fond of the people I went to high school with.
Yeah, I didn't like them 20 years ago. I doubt much has changed.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe they're different people, but that doesn't mean I'm gonna like them.
I agree. I that's my thoughts too. That's my feelings.
And
as well.
I have the great excuse of living 900 miles away. So
I think you just moved just so you would have that excuse. Because like, what
is
like,
exactly it? Yeah.
Because what like, what else are you gonna do? Like, they can't just show up to your house randomly and drag you to the reunion and. Like, oh yeah, I totally would come, Stacy, but
that would probably be like some really shitty PG-13 horror movie scenario.
Yes. Yeah. I'm surprised there isn't a horror movie about class reunions. That would be interesting. That should be done. That's right. That's gonna be our movie. We're gonna work on that, Rachel. Me and you. We're gonna write that and make it.
Yeah, we are.
You heard it here first, so copyright that shit.
Oh, and then the Leap Day movie, too, where the killer comes out every 4 years on Leap Day.
Yes, that's right. We had that copyrighted, too. Mm-hmm. So we got to get going on these, Rachel.
I know.
But it is, yeah, so we're visiting 1994. We're going to be taking a look at Wes Craven's New Nightmare. So this was, I remembered, the only Nightmare movies I remember coming out in theater when I was younger was this one and the last one we did, Part 6, Freddy's Dead.
Okay.
And I remember, like, the trailers for this was, like, they didn't, if I remember correctly, I feel like they didn't dive into the whole, like, this is the like, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy was a movie, and this is, you know, Heather Landenkamp's playing herself, and, you know, I feel like they didn't go that route too much. I remember seeing Robert Englund outside of the makeup in the trailer, but I think they didn't explain it. And it was just like these quick shots of just like everybody, and then like Freddy's back, and then you got like Wes Craven there doing his like spiel about why Freddy came back, and then it was like Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And this is notable because this is the first time Wes Craven has returned to the franchise really since Part 1. He produced Part 3, but that was all he did with Part 3. In this one, he wrote and directed it and produced it and all that good stuff. He kind of reclaimed his story to a point. And this was supposed to be titled Nightmare on Elm Street Part 7. It was supposed to be called Nightmare on Elm Street Part 7. The Ascension. That's what it's called. It was supposed to be called
Ascension.
The Ascension. Yes.
Okay.
So that was the working title that Wes Craven came out with, and it was supposed to be a lot more meta than what it was. Like, he was supposed to have like almost everybody from all the Nightmare movies in this one, including Patricia Arquette. Like all the Dream Warrior kids, a chick that played Alice.
They bring the one where they bring everyone back.
Yep.
Even Abraham Lincoln. Yes. Did you get the reference?
I think I did, yes.
Okay.
I think I did get that, yes. there is a thing in the trivia where Wes was too intimidated to ask Johnny Depp to make an appearance in the movie.
That's awesome.
Because it's 1994, so Johnny Depp was a pretty big star right around that point.
Yeah, by then it was Edward Scissorhands and other things.
He was like a pretty big star. So Wes like felt a little intimidated, and I felt like he would just say no anyway and was like, eh. But then he ran into Johnny Depp like a couple years later. And, you know, said, hey, would you have been in it if I asked you to? And Johnny was like, yeah, you should have just totally have asked me. I would have done it in a heartbeat. So it's like one of like Wes Craven's like big regrets.
Biggest regrets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the budget for this was $8 million. It made $19.7 million. It sounds high, but it's the poorest performing film in the Nightmare series, which is weird. I mean, 19.7 based on $8 million. That don't sound like anything to sneeze at. But it didn't do as good as other Nightmare movies.
Yeah.
So let's figure out why. Why did this tank so terribly? So as we said in the beginning, this is a meta movie. This is supposed to be taking place in real life, and we have the return of Heather Landenkamp, who is playing herself. And I have to say, at least in this first half of the movie, I hope the real, real Heather Langenkamp is not as annoying as this Heather Langenkamp was. Did you find her really annoying, like, in the first half of this movie?
But overshadowed by her very annoying son throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
I pretty much just hate child actors, unless they're just, like, really amazing child actors, which... The 80s, before like the late 90s, I feel like, or early 2000s, there just weren't any.
Yeah.
Other than Macaulay Culkin.
Right.
And, well, we all know what happened to him. So it's just.
Elijah Wood. Elijah Wood was child
actor. Elijah Wood, of course. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry, Elijah. Just can't stand child actors for the most part. And he was so bad.
And it feels like. child actors in horror movies is like real hit or miss, you know, like,
yeah,
because like the girl in Poltergeist, like, she was good.
Oh, Carol Ann, yeah.
She was really good, I thought. And then you get this kid in this movie, like, yeah, I agree with you, like, this kid was just like fucking annoying.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is with like kids in horror movies where they feel like they have to be annoying. I almost kind of wish they didn't put the kid in. Like, I kind of wish the movie centered just around just the actors from, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, it was just Heather Langenkamp and Robert Englund and Wes Craven, and even get Johnny Depp and all. And like, all this was happening to them,
mm-hmm.
and not have the kid involved. I don't even know why the kid had to be involved, honestly.
I guess at like, this point, it has to be, like, higher stakes. It's not just the teenagers running around themselves. There's a child involved. She's a mother now. She's, you know, she's matured. She's moving. You know, it's not just about her. You know, we've seen that story. What's Heather going to do now that her child is in danger? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess even Wes Craven has to fall for a trope every now and then.
Yeah, it's like, it's actually pretty, it's almost a little disappointing, and I don't know, just to think that you have to make a woman a mother to raise the stakes.
Yes, I agree. I really I'm getting tired of that.
Myself, it's tight. I'll cut a bitch for myself. Don't worry. I don't need a kid.
Now, the only time I feel like that works where is if that comes into play of the movie referencing the Babadook. Have you seen the Babadook?
I have. That made sense because it was a children's book.
Yep.
And her husband had died, mm-hmm. and there was clearly a history of mental illness. Yeah. So, I mean, there are times where it makes sense within the story. It totally makes sense within The Exorcist.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But here, yeah, this just like let Heather fight for Heather.
Right. I 100% agree with you.
Or even better, maybe like another young starlet who was up and coming in Hollywood, fighting together or helping fight for her or something. But
yeah.
Fucking annoying ass brat.
Kid,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little, not a little, it's pretty insulting. It really is. Like, why do we have to have kids to fight for something we believe in? We could fight for old people too, you know?
Right. Like, it couldn't have been like Heather's mom or something.
Yeah. Because the audience wouldn't care as much. I don't know about that. Give me an old lady or a little annoying shit. I'll probably pick the old lady.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. Sorry. Yeah.
No,
I feel my pedestal.
I feel the same way as you. So you can stay right on that pedestal if you want. So the start of the movie, we see this dude like hammering like a new like Freddy glove, but it's like a Terminator style.
it's very robotic.
Yeah,
definitely has like a cyborg edge to it.
Yeah, like almost like steampunk Freddy. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So we find out this is actually a set of a movie. And we hear Wes Craven yell cut, and then we see Heather Langenkamp off to the side, and we find out that she has a kid named Dylan and a husband named Chase, and Chase is the guy in charge of special effects, but like, you know, like the practical special effects, like,
yeah,
because kids back in the day, they didn't have computers like they do nowadays, so they had to, like, if they wanted to make some guy's head explode, they had to make like a rubber version of a guy and then like have it explode in real life filled with fake blood.
It's true.
And it was a lot cooler. Damn it.
Sometimes.
damn it. So that's what this guy does. He does stuff like that, and he's got like these two like goofball assistants. Whose names I don't remember because they don't really figure into the plot.
They don't matter.
It was like Terry and Jerry or some shit like that.
Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry, sure. But then the robotic Freddy glove starts getting a mind of its own, starts coming to life. And starts attacking Tom and Jerry, and then goes after Chase, and then we find out this is a nightmare Heather is having during an earthquake.
Yeah.
Which must suck. Like, you're not only having a nightmare where your husband's getting killed, but then you wake up and it's like, oh, fuck, there's an earthquake. Like, goddamn. So after the earthquake, we get a lot of, like, a big old exposition dump where we find out Heather has a stalker who's been calling the house and pretending to be Freddy Krueger. There's been a bunch of earthquakes, like, happening for, like, the past few weeks, and nobody can, like, explain it. Heather needs to go to a talk show appearance, and then here I feel like she's at peak annoyance. Because it's like everything is just like bothersome to her. And I guess she had a really terrible nightmare and she just had her earthquake. But I felt like she was way to the extreme because it was like, you know, Dylan, don't watch the TV. Dylan, quit playing with your food. Dylan, why are you just walking that way? Dylan, don't go up the stairs. And oh, Chase, you need to not do this. And like she was just like really aggravated. Like I was just like, my God, I really hope the real life Heather Langenkamp is not like this. Like, God damn. So Chase is leaving, like, out of town to go do, like, special effects for, like, a commercial or something. And we have, like, a babysitter who either is a very young-looking 20-something or the teenager whose parents just let her do whatever the hell she wants to do. Because it seems like she just kind of comes and goes as she please. Her name's Jenny?
Julie, I believe.
Julie.
Julie.
Yeah. Julie, yes. Thank you. Her name's Julie, and yeah, I can't figure out, like, pinpoint what's her deal. Like, I mean, she's a nanny, I guess, but she looks like a teenager. But she's, like I said, comes and goes as she pleases. And it's not like she's restricted by, like, school hours or parents or anything. So we got her. And I keep wanting to call her Nancy because, you know, she plays the character Nancy. Heather.
Yeah. Heather.
Her name is Heather in the movie. See, even I'm blurring the line. I don't know what's real and what's fake. Oh, no.
It's Inception.
Oh, no.
But not.
No, that's not what Inception was, I don't think.
No, it wasn't. That's okay. True. Okay.
So Heather goes to a talk show where, according to the IMDb trivia, this was based on a real-life thing that happened to her and Robert Englund. They were having an interview, and then Robert came out in Freddy makeup and everything. And, like, all the kids in the audience were all, like, excited and was like, yay! We're chanting Freddy or whatever. And then Heather and the host and, like, all the parents were, like, horrified because they're, like, worshiping basically a serial killer. Basically. Like, you'll albeit a fictional serial killer, but nonetheless, a serial killer who's, like, killed, like, scores of people throughout, like, 9 movies or whatever.
Children of all things.
Yeah. So that whole scene was based on a real thing that happened to Heather Langenkamp. And I did kind of, what I do like about this movie is we do get to see Robert Englund not only outside of the Freddy makeup, but to be like himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems kind of like a weird, chill guy. What was your thoughts on like non-Freddy Robert Englund?
He was so fancy.
Care to explain?
It was just like, I don't know. He was just always, he just seemed always so, you know, put together with his clothes and his like tinted glasses and his hair was so well done and, you know, smooth skin. And then they show his house and it's like nice and he's painting and I'm like, what the fuck? You know, it's just so, I mean, who knows if this is how Robert Englund is in real life, but the movie portrayal of Robert Englund, he was just so soft-spoken and he friendly and kind and do you need a shoulder to cry on? You know, that kind of thing. And it's so weird. I liked it. I dug it. It was, I don't know if this is how he really is or he was portraying himself as being the polar opposite of Freddy for the purpose of the movie, but it was fun. It worked. I liked it.
I really did like, you know, that we got to see, you know, him kind of be himself a little bit. And yeah, we don't know how accurate these depictions of these people are. Because, you know, we get like everybody. We do get Because after the talk show, she gets called over to New Line Cinema, and she meets up with producer Robert Shea, who was the real-life producer of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, and that was really him playing himself, and he's talking, telling, you know, keep on calling Nancy, Heather. He keeps telling Heather, hey, we're, you know, Wes is working on a new Nightmare, you know, a new Freddy movie, actually. They keep saying a Freddy movie. And, you know, we want you in it, and we don't know what the script's going to be yet, but, you know, we're excited to bring it back. And then we kind of get, like, an inkling of, like, this weird, there's, like, this weird, like, story or legend kind of happening in the background of this movie that pops up every now and then, and we get kind of a start of it here. Because they mention that Wes Craven only writes these Freddy movies when he has nightmares. And then he hasn't wrote a movie in about 10 years or whatever. Or maybe it was longer than that. And then he started writing again. And so then Heather's like, so he's having nightmares again. And there's this weird like lore that's kind of in the background. And we'll kind of dive deep into it later when we get to Wes Craven's house. But it starts kind of here. So she's really like anti not wanting to be, you know, in a new Nightmare movie because she's got the stalker. She's worried about the stalker, which is another thing that was based on her real life. She actually had a stalker.
Hmm.
And she gave Wes Craven permission to use that as a plot device in this movie. I don't know how it played out in real life. I doubt he turned into a demonic creature and tried to kill her and her kid, so then the kid starts acting weird. She goes home, the kid's acting weird, kind of acting like you bought up The Exorcist, like kind of like, you know, Reagan from The Exorcist, and is like, you know, like foaming at the mouth and yelling, and starts doing like the chanting of the 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you, and all this crazy shit that kids do in horror movies.
Because,
you know, they have to be the victim, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So then she starts freaking out. Heather starts freaking out and calls Chase and is like, yeah, this kid, man, he's just so, like, whacked out. And, I, you know, you need to come back home. And so he's like, all right, fine. And so he was apparently, like, he says he's 3 hours away, but it took, like, 8 hours for him to even get close to home. And I do like, and what do you think about the trucks? Because it's basically our first real-life kill was mm-hmm. the truck scene. And I thought it was interesting because they used the it wasn't the robot glove from the beginning, but it was like this new glove that he was designing for the new movie, because the Robert Shea said he hired Chase to work on the new glove and just didn't tell Heather about it. So, like, what did you think about this part where he's in the truck and he's, you know, sleeping, and maybe the real glove is killing him, or maybe it was a dream? Like, I don't know. Like, what's your thoughts on that?
I like it. I mean, I thought it was very poetic how he's part of this whole process, which he kept from his wife, who he knows is having issues also with the stalker due to her popularity from these films.
Yeah.
And then he gets killed by the thing that he's helping, that he's helping make to help continue the horror.
Uh-huh.
So it was a nice, like, circle of life, but instead death.
It's a circle of death.
Probably wouldn't have been popular for Elton if that had been the title, but...
well, true.
Yeah. I liked it. It worked. And, I mean, he needed to die, obviously.
He needed to die. Yeah. Yeah, well, if you mean to forward the plot, then yes.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant.
Yes.
He wasn't a bad guy. He wasn't a horrible husband. He put up with Heather's craziness.
Yeah.
And, you know, very calmly, he was clearly the voice of reason when she was a little off the rails. But, you know, he didn't mock her or tell her to fuck off or whatever. I mean, he did go to work, but, you know, bitches got to work. No, I mean, it was, I was actually sad that he died, but I understood why he died and he needed to die.
Yeah.
And I liked the death, you know, it was good.
Agreed. I agree with you. Like, he did have to kind of die for the events to move forward, because I feel like if he didn't, he was just there, then this all would have just been happening for no reason, because they had to give, like, a reason for the kid to go kind of crazy.
Well, not only that, but Heather needed to feel completely alone as well.
Yeah.
Being the parent of the kid going through all that, because if she had had her husband, I mean, that helps alleviate so much stress when you have a partner there. So if he had been there, it wouldn't have been as tense.
Yeah.
She definitely would not have been as frantic with him there. So yeah, he had to go.
Exactly.
Sorry, Chase.
Yeah.
Gotta die.
So yeah, so the husband's dead, and that, I'm telling you, it's a staple in all these movies. There has to be a funeral scene. I've not noticed that until I did the show with you. Like, every one of these movies had a funeral.
That's like, true.
Up to the first one.
I was going to say, I don't know how there's any more cemetery left, but we're in LA. We're not actually in Oakwood or wherever, Illinois. Springwood, wherever the movies are supposed to take place. I forget this is LA because of the plot. So.
Yeah, this movie takes place in LA, absolutely.
Yeah, but the whole point.
No, yeah. So at the funeral, we get, I don't know if you noticed or paid attention, like, at the funerals, but, like, in the back, like, behind, like, Heather and everyone, was, like, most of the cast from the first movie. Like, did you notice that? Outside of John Saxton. They focus on John Saxton.
No, I only noticed him.
But they had the guy that played Nick, the guy who got hung in the jail cell in the first movie.
Yeah.
They had the girl that played Tina.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, they were all in the back behind Heather and Dylan. And I think
I was like, why is the babysitter sitting on the front row? That was kind of my... Shouldn't there be other family, like his parents or siblings?
I wondered about his parents. I feel like they didn't, like...
Her family.
There.
I mean, surely not all their family members are dead. Surely. Like, why is the babysitter... whatever, you know. Because she's an established character at this point.
Right.
We're already paying her. She gets a front row seat at the funeral.
But yeah, so like John Saxton is there, Robert Englund, of course, is there, and Wes Craven was in the background along with Robert Shea, and then all the cast of the first Nightmare, minus Johnny Depp.
Yeah, of course.
Because Wes thought he would be too good for this.
Yeah.
Then
if you can only see him now, 26 years later.
Yes. I feel like Johnny Depp would do it now still.
Oh, yeah, he probably would. But, like, if you take Johnny Depp's fame at the early 90s compared to, like, after Pirates of the Caribbean and everything else he's done since then, his resurgence in the early 2000s, I mean, what he did in the 90s is nothing compared to how big he got in the last 15 years.
That is very true.
And I'm sure he probably would come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean.
I agree. I believe he would. We do get this part where there's which makes me wonder. It actually made me question this. What happens if an earthquake is happening during a funeral? In this movie, nothing happened, like, to the casket. Like, I always worry, like, is the casket gonna fall off the little wrench thing and just fall into the ground? Like, is it gonna topple over? Like, what's gonna happen? Like, so that happens here. We get an earthquake, and the coffin falls into the ground.
I will let you know that it does seem to be, and I don't know how true, how accurate this is, but the higher things are up, the worse off they are. The closer to the ground they are, the less worse they are.
Oh, okay.
So, I've only been in, two very, very minor earthquakes, because there is a fault line that runs in Arkansas, where I'm from.
Mm, Okay.
And my sophomore year of college, there was one. And those of us who were in the dorms, like we were all like on the third floor, we were all like, what the fuck was that? You know, we were freaking out because we'd never been in an earthquake before. But I mean, it was minor, but there was definitely some shaking. So, I mean, everybody on the third floor felt it. And then we were talking to people who had been downstairs and they're like, we didn't feel it. Everybody was talking about an earthquake. We felt, we didn't feel anything. Oh, people were walking around outside. Huh. So, yeah, I wonder how true that is. It's just my very, very extremely limited experience. But it does, and I mean, if you look at damaged stuff, it does seem like things that are higher up get the worst of it than things that are on the ground. So, ground level anyway. True. So, at a funeral, probably very little.
Huh.
But I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, so, no.
Like I said, limited experience.
Yeah, I've never been in an earthquake myself. I've been through a tornado, which is not the same thing. Oof, yes.
No.
But
just amazingly,
equally scary.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I grew up in Tornado Alley too, and I never got hit. Thank God.
Oh,
that's
good.
Terrifying.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, plenty of places in Arkansas, but never where my hometown where I grew up, or parts of the town had, but like way out, like rural parts, never anyone I knew had been through it. So anyway, sorry.
No,
now that we're done
fine.
Talking about weather phenomena.
Let's talk about hurricanes. No, so the coffin falls into the ground, and so Dylan goes missing, and Heather finds Dylan like in the casket somehow.
Because that makes total sense.
And we do get like a Freddy glove like coming out from the bottom of the casket, reaching out for Dylan, but Heather manages to get him in time, and then the dead body of Chase comes alive and says something like you know, I'm taking you with me, or come with me, or whatever, something like that. But this ends up being a nightmare.
But I did like this scene, like the part with the coffin and everything, with her going, like, because it was obviously very much a dream, because like the lining of the coffin extended into what looked like more of a tunnel as Freddy was dragging Dylan away. And it's obviously a very practical effect, and it looked really good. It worked so well.
I agree.
In a very claustrophobic, nightmarish kind of way of everything that was happening. I did like that.
Yeah, that was a cool scene. So then we do get this part where Heather and John Saxton are like hanging out in the park, and you know, she's talking about how she's feeling crazy and how Dylan's acting and is worried about Dylan, and she's worried that, like, you know, Freddie is actually coming to life because of all these things kind of adding up, with the stalker calling her, doing the 1, 2, ready for you, and you know, her seeing all like this whole movie, by the way, like the background has like all these slashes from like the earthquake to her house, had like slashes across her wall, like with damage. There's like stickers with slashes on it. People get scars with slashes on it. The kids like stuff Tyrannosaurus Rex. There's a Pokemon called Tyranitar. So.
Oh, okay.
Tyrannosaurus Rex. And getting slashed. And so she's all like worried, like she's like thinking, I'm going crazy. I'm thinking like Freddy's coming for me. And then we get this part, and it's not super explained well. I mean, Wes Craven kind of explains it, but no, it wasn't even Wes. It was Robert Englund, actually. Where the Dylan, he climbs up this like slide, and he goes onto the very like tippy top of the slide because it's shaped like a rocket, and then he's just like extending his arms into the air, and then you know, of course, Heather freaks out and he loses balance and falls, and she miraculously catches him.
Yeah.
But then this is explained later when she calls Robert Englund and is like saying like, hey, are you having like weird Freddy shit happen to you? Cause I keep having all this weird Freddy shit happen to me. And he's painting a picture in his house. And then he says something about, yeah, Wes is working on the script, and something about, He says, far in has Dylan reaches for God or something, and that's supposed to explain it, but I still don't get how that's an explanation. Like,
don't either.
Like, it was just like a thing that just happened.
I was very lost, yes.
And then the painting that Robert Englund was doing was of like a darker, more edgier Freddy Krueger with the gloves out. And sadly, this is the last we see of Robert Englund as himself, because he disappears from the movie after this. I guess he gets freaked out and leaves town or something.
Yeah, she asks if she can come over, and he's like, no, I got stuff going on. And then she tries to call him later, and there's like this really long voice message to get to leave a message for him about, I'll be out of town for a while.
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Or he went to rehab.
Or he went to fancy rehab, maybe. I don't know.
I feel like that's an excuse that they give, like, oh, I'm going to be leaving town for a few weeks, so don't try to reach me at a hospital or, you know, anywhere, just wherever. I mean, don't check the hospital.
It's always exhaustion. Oh, so-and-so's taking a break from exhaustion. And then, like, years later, like, oh, yeah, that was totally rehab.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we figured it out. It's okay. We hope you get better.
Get rehab. So then she goes to visit Wes Craven, who again plays himself, and he's talking about the movie, what the movie's about, and this is where we get like slapped in the face with the lore. And now, when I first saw this movie, it was when it came out onto VHS, and I rented it from the video store. So I'm about 14, 15 years old at this time. And I did not like this movie because I did not understand a fucking thing that was going on. Because I just wanted to see Freddy Krueger kill some teenagers, right? And I didn't know anything about this. I just knew it was Wes Craven's new nightmare and like Freddy's back and blah, blah, blah. So I was excited and I was like, oh, awesome. So I went, I rented it and I watched it, and then it's like, okay, everyone's playing themselves. That's kind of interesting. And then I'm like, all right, so that means Freddy Krueger's going to come to life. But it's like, all right, how's he come to life? And then we got Wes Craven doing this giant info dump on like what's going on. And so it took a few viewings to kind of get it. And I don't know if I will still 100% get it, but essentially, to boil it down, there's a demon. All right. Mm-hmm. And it took a liking to this Freddy Krueger character that Wes Craven created about 10 years ago. All right. And so it manifested itself as Freddy Krueger. Now, because there was a movie Freddy Krueger, the demon just kind of lied low and was just like, yeah, Freddy Krueger exists, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I'm just here. But then they stopped making Freddy Krueger movies. So now the demon's like, well, now's obviously the good time for me to come to Earth and, you know, start terrorizing people as Freddy Krueger, because that's the appearance that I took. And so Wes Craven's having these nightmares about this demon who is taking the form of Freddy Krueger. And because there's no more Freddy Krueger movies, so he needs to make a new Freddy Krueger movie in order to stop this demon. But the Freddy Krueger movie that he's working on is about them working on a new Freddy Krueger movie. So, yeah.
Are you sure this is an Inception?
I'm pretty sure this was not Inception. I don't think it was Inception.
Okay.
I don't know. But that's the most I was able to make sense of what happened.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's spot on. But then how do you ever truly defeat the demon if you stop making movies?
Well, we will get to that.
Okay, I know. I feel like we need Sam and Dean Winchester in here to figure it all out.
Exactly,
for us.
Right? I felt like we could have totally had a Supernatural episode, just walk right in.
Yep.
And then, so, like I said, the script that Wes Craven is writing in this movie is the movie we are watching.
Yep.
In that we see shots of his computer screen, and the lines of dialogue they're having is on the computer screen. So, there you go. So now we then go off of that and we focus on the medical elements of Dylan as he's like sleepwalking all over the house. Fucking Heather. I think my problem is I'm looking at Wikipedia and IMDb and it keeps saying Heather or Nancy. It was like Nancy Thompson this or whatever. So that's my problem. I keep looking at that. Heather. is like freaking out and having dreams of, you know, Dylan like trying to kill her, and he's turning into Freddy. And so then she eventually takes him to a hospital where we meet this nurse who, yes, granted, 100% I agree, she's trying to help the kid. I understand she's just looking out for the welfare of the kid. She's, you know, one of those super nice nurses who's like, my patients come first, and this is a kid. He needs help. I'm going to worry about it. But we're seeing everything from the point of view of Heather. So she just comes off as this, like, real pushy, like, bitch of a nurse. Like, do you agree with that? Like, do you think, like, we were seeing it from her point of view? So she just came off, like, super, like, you know, like, yeah, like, really bitchy?
Well, I feel like in the beginning, she was being very helpful and concerned. And I think she was a doctor, not a nurse.
Really? Okay. I know I keep saying that, but I really felt like she was a nurse only because of the outfit. She didn't have a doctor's uniform on. She had, like, a nurse's uniform on. That's why I said nurse.
Really? I thought she had a white coat on over something, like, over and out.
Okay. I'd
have to go back and look.
I don't remember, honestly. I'm sorry. I know. There's female doctors. I know.
Well, no, but not only that, but just the way she was talking and, you know, running things. I mean, nurses can't make those kinds of decisions either.
Well, I feel like in horror movies, they do.
I know. But anyway, I feel like in the beginning, she was trying to be very concerned and helpful. And let's work with you to help get your son better and everything. But by the end of their time at the hospital, she was just a fucking bitch.
Okay.
Like, and whether that was from Heather's point of view or not, she was just, I mean, there was just, if she really thought there was a problem with Heather as a mother, I mean, there was like no call up to social services. Let's figure this out. Hold this woman in security and dope up her son so he can sleep against any kind of, I mean, I feel like they broke like a million rules
to pull
that off. I can see where you're coming from, but yeah, I mean, it's a split for me. Like, I really do feel like she was trying to be nice in the beginning and then turned into an evil bitch by the end.
Okay.
Whether that was because it was Heather's point of view or that was just the character, I don't know.
I guess I see your point of view now that I'm really thinking about it. Because at the beginning, she was pretty helpful, but then it got just, like, progressively worse as the hospital scenes went along.
Right. That killed me is when, I don't know if you're getting to this part yet or not, but so they leave the kid there, Dylan, at the hospital to stay overnight.
Uh-huh.
Try to figure some shit out. Definitely dealing with, what you say, like, childhood schizophrenia or something was what she was calling it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they kept saying it was schizophrenia, yes.
Yeah. Heather leaves, goes home, and then has a dream, and then comes back because she thinks he's in trouble, and they're like, oh, no, he's fine. Oh, he had an episode of the night. We had to put him in an oxygen tent. I'm like, fuck, you didn't call his mom when he had
I had that thought,
and
too.
Is now in an oxygen tent? What?
Yes. I had that thought, too, because I'm like, what the fuck kind of hospital is going to have, like, notice that something is up with the kid and not even notify the parent? Like, that's just shitty, like, doctoring, nursing, whatever.
I feel like this was a very shitty L.A. hospital. I don't.
And I had a feeling you were going to have feelings on that because, you know, you're a mother and everything.
I had all the feelings, yeah. I mean, when Mia was a baby, she was in the NICU for quite a while. And she had a really big surgery, and like the night of her surgery, like after she had had surgery, like that night we went home and we went to bed, and they called us at 3 o'clock in the morning because she was having problems. I mean, nothing major. They got her stabilized and everything was fine, but they did call us to give us an update in the middle. I mean, 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're like, fuck, thanks. You know, so we wouldn't have any surprises the next day when we showed up.
Right.
So yeah, I've actually been there.
There you go.
The kid has an episode. I don't know what he did to get into an oxygen tent. And I don't even know what the fucking oxygen tent really is. If that's something that was really real or if it's...
It didn't even feel like it was an actual, like, oxygen, like, tent. It was just, like, this weird, like, netting that was over, like, his face.
Well, yeah, it was like a vinyl covering. almost like you would put somebody in over to keep germs off, like make sure they didn't get any kind of infection or anything. And I mean, I didn't really see any real closure to it and how they would pump oxygen in there. And then he's also breathing out carbon dioxide. I'm very confused at what this contraption was supposed to be. I mean, if he needed oxygen, you just put him on oxygen and put the little tubes up his nose. It's, I don't know if it was a real thing or if they were just making shit up. I don't know. But anyway, continue.
No, yeah. No, I 100% agree. I thought that was ridiculous.
Bottom line, it was a shitty hospital. That's just all we get out of that.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I was going to kind of speed through this because not a lot happens in the middle chunk outside of the hospital. It kind of all happens when she gets to the hospital. So like you said, she goes back home after putting him in the hospital, or he's in the hospital. She has a bad dream about, Dylan trying to kill her again or whatever. No, she was at the hospital when she had that dream, actually. She was next to him.
Oh, okay.
Because remember, they said that she didn't know what happened to him. So she was there sitting awake.
She had gone home and had a dream and then came back to the hospital worried about Freddy getting him or something.
Yeah. And then she fell back asleep, had the dream where Dylan like was spitting up like black tar everywhere.
God, that was so nasty. Yeah.
And so then the doctor, well, I'm saying she's a doctor because I feel a little bad for assuming.
I'm pretty sure she was a doctor.
I really, because movies, they do that, right? They just have the nurse, like a nurse, they say nurse, whatever, and then she's in charge of everything, like Nurse Ratched and went through over to Cuckoo's Nest. So I just thought she was a nurse, but you very well could be right. She very well could have been the doctor in charge. So
pretty sure.
I'm sorry to everybody. So then the doctor comes in with nurses and is like, hold her down. They end up strapping her in and they start doing like medical procedures on the kid. And then the doctor turns into Freddy Krueger. And then of course that ends up being a dream. And then that's when they're like, yeah, we took him away to do something. He's another
some
room.
Sort of testing. Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't want to wake you.
How this hospital supposedly has pediatric testing. Like, not everybody gets their tests in the same place.
Oh.
Whatever. Anyway, sorry.
I remembered what happened when she left the hospital to go back home. I just don't remember what happened. So she went to look up, like, his condition, like, his symptoms. And she starts kind of mimicking Nancy from the first movie where she's got the pot of coffee in the bedside and she doesn't want to fall asleep and she's looking at the books and stuff. And so then an earthquake happens in the house and she is like, she notices the coffee pot is broken. And when she goes to investigate, Freddy Krueger shows up finally.
Yes.
Because he's been kind of like just not really on screen too often. He just kind of shows up as other people or we see his glove, but that's about it. But the full Freddy shows up and he like looks vastly different. Like they updated his look according to the IMDb page.
They gave him a download.
They gave him a download. Yeah. They totally gave him a download. And so
quick side note, oxygen tents are real. It wasn't bullshit they were making up. They're a real deal. I just looked it up. I don't understand the point, but whatever. Go on. I do wonder what they do
because, like, I had to go to the hospital last year for breathing issues, and they didn't put me in an oxygen tank. I just had a tube up my nose.
The cannulas, yeah. I'm wondering how common they are anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, because a lot.
So Freddy finally shows up. He has his updated look, and he shows up finally, and he's got like a black trench coat with like not even like the red and like kind of the red and green sweater, but it's not the same red and green sweater. And he looks like he's more like menacing. Like I feel like he seemed bigger. You know, like did you get that feeling? Like he felt kind of bigger. A little more like scary looking. Like what are your thoughts on like what does Freddy look like?
I didn't notice so much here, but more toward the end I felt like he actually kind of looked faker than he did before.
Wow.
Yeah, like the burns didn't look as authentic. Like they were trying to make him look plastic. I don't know to really how to explain it, but and it may have been an artistic choice. Because, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, if it's a demon that's inhabited the world and he clung to the idea of Freddy within the movies, and then, you know, it would take on a new form. I mean, not like an all new Freddy form, but like a different form of Freddy. Then, yeah. I mean, it's perfectly believable that he wouldn't look exactly the same, or I'm bullshitting. I don't know. I'm trying to give it credit, but he did. He looked more plastic to me. He really did.
You think so?
Yeah, I really think so.
Huh.
Like,
I mean,
far more prosthetic.
Because, like, you know, this was, according to everything I'm reading, like, this was, like, the Freddy that Wes Craven, like, originally envisioned back, you know, back in the day. Mm. And, you know, he wanted Freddy to be really scary and hulking and, you know, more, you know, of an imposing figure. And, you know, he ended up just being, like, a joke as the series went on. So this was, like,
right.
a reinvention of sorts. So I think it was like an artistic vision to kind of like redo him. I don't know. I thought it was, like, again, I thought he was really like kind of scary in this one, honestly. Like, it was kind of like back to like the first movie, Freddy. I was old enough by the time I saw this movie, I wasn't scared of him, but like, I can see like little kids maybe watching this and maybe being terrified at, you know, at him.
It's possible.
Because I mean, I felt like he was way scarier in this one. So it was because of this, she rushes back to the hospital. And that's when all this stuff at the hospital takes place, where she falls asleep next to him in the bed. She has the dream. The doctor comes in. And then she wakes up, finds he got moved to a room. And then she's, the kid wants to go home, or at least get his T-Rex. And she's about to leave to go do that when a doctor with security guards, like pulls her into another room,
mm-hmm.
and basically like interrogates her like a fucking cop, and is like, "Are you doing drugs? Do you have mental illnesses? Like, we'll get you clean. We'll put him in a foster home. Like, blah, 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 blah."
It was intense. Like.
Like, Jesus Christ, lady.
I'm just imagining it like as some sort of after school special, or you know, or you know, this is your brain on drugs frying pan.
Yes.
It was intense.
It was like that lady was just like fucking accusing her of all this shit.
Yeah,
and
like,
she's just
like addiction and mental illness isn't a disease.
And she's just like I just want to go home and get this thing for my kid, and he's just having difficulty because his dad just died like 2 days ago. Like, Jesus Christ. So in the room that the kid is in, the babysitter Julie was there, and so because, you know, Heather was all like, you know, I don't, you know, don't let him fall asleep. The nurses show
yes,
up.
Yes, these were nurses. They were fucking evil.
Yeah, Jesus fuck. This hospital is fucking crazy.
The worst hospital.
I do not want to go to this hospital. God damn.
No stars. Their bedside manner sucks.
Everything is like your fault. Like, oh, you had a heart attack. Well, I suppose you bought that on yourself, huh, mister?
Yeah. What'd you go and have a heart for?
Right. It's what you get for having a heart.
Oh, you already had a heart? Well, that's a pre-existing condition.
Oh, your stomach hurts? It could be your appendix? Nah, you just ate something, didn't you? You gotta stop eating that garbage.
Well, if it's like the school nurse when I was in college for the first 3 years, if any guy went to her complaining of anything, she would start asking questions about basically inferring that it was a sexually transmitted disease. If it were a girl, She was pregnant.
What? Like,
thank God I never had to go in to see her.
Oh my God. That's how
she started like every visit, apparently. I never had to see her, but I heard from other people. Like, guys are pretty much interrogated about having STDs and girls were interrogated about being pregnant. It's like, Jesus. No, can we fucking move on, please?
Wow.
That's yeah. Ridiculous. Thankfully I didn't get sick till my senior year and we had a new nurse by then.
Oh, okay. I was saying, and then you
and
were
I
pregnant
was not pregnant, nor did I have an STD. It was just laryngitis.
Oh, okay. Okay. I wasn't gonna go the STD route. I swear. I was gonna make the pregnancy joke, but not the STD joke. I promise.
Okay.
So these nurses, these fucking nurses show up to this kid, to the kid's room or this room the kid is in, and the babysitter Julie is like, no, the mom says she didn't want her to, you know, to go to sleep and, you know, wait till the mom gets back, blah, blah, blah. But they did like this weird, like, bait and switch thing where like one nurse went to the kid and then Julie confronted the other nurse because the other nurse had the needle in her hand.
That was it.
And so they didn't, you know, and then while Julie was busy with her, the second nurse by the kid pulled out a needle out of her pocket and stuck it into the kid. And then they like gave this evil wicked, and they gave this evil smile when they did that.
I know. It's like, and how were they already prepared for that shit? They hadn't encountered this. It was like, is this just a game they play on night shift? Because night shift people are fucking crazy, man. And I can say that because A, I work night shift, and B, my mom still works night shift. They're bananas. They don't sleep like normal people, so they are fucked in the head.
Yes. Yeah. So they put the stuff into the kid, and then so Julie's trying to keep him awake, but he ends up falling asleep, which causes Freddy to show up in the room.
Yeah.
And it's one of those times where like only the kid can see Freddy and not anyone else, but like he's actually interacting with the real world. And so we get either this is supposed to be a callback or Wes Craven really likes having girls slide on the wall and towards the ceiling. One of the two, but we get a kind of a callback to the first movie where Julie's getting killed by Freddy as she's being dragged up the wall and then over the ceiling. And this is a fucking awesome scene. I really like this scene because it's very scary. It's really freaky. And, you know, it's you know, like I said, he was very menacing in this part. And, you know, and the kid, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
and the kid might... being the only one who can physically see all that was going on.
Yes.
Touch. Yes.
So he's freaking out and he doesn't know what to do. And, you know, none of the fucking hospital staff want to help. So he doesn't know who to call. So Julie ends up getting killed by Freddy. And then, of course, they hear the screams. And Heather runs in, sees Julie's dead, and then the kid's gone. The kid, like, man, just, like, run away. And so they establish that that they live just across from the freeway.
Yeah. Oh, but real quick, did you see? It was very subtle, but I absolutely loved it. So she runs into – they're all running to see what's going on with Julie when she's screaming. They're all looking up. They're trying to hold her back. Like, those two evil nurses are trying to hold Heather back. Did you see her, like, that awesome elbow?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I loved it. It was so subtle.
Yes. That was amazing.
It was absolutely. It was, like, total muscle memory, too.
It was.
That was cool. Like, literally, legit, my favorite part of the whole movie.
That was awesome.
She elbowed that evil bitch nurse and just made it look so cool and effortless. Like, yeah. That's a final girl. Yeah.
This is the part where Heather became cool finally in this movie. Like, she went from being annoying to awesome. Was during this last part, the last 20 minutes of this movie. And so she realizes that the kids are going home, and so he has to cross this freeway. And so then we get this scene where the kid, you know, walks onto the freeway, and then like this giant like Freddy appears in the sky.
Yeah,
and using his glove, he like picks up the kid, by the back of the shirt and kind of carries him over the highway while Heather is you know, she's chasing after him across the highway, and there's like all these cars dodging her, and all this like crazy shit's happening. And so then she, prior to leaving the hospital, she called John Saxton for help. And so she finally manages to get to her house after causing like 30 car piles on the freeway. And now, okay, wait, I'm going to stop for a second because she's supposed to be herself. So she's Heather Langenkamp, who's famous. Like, she's famous. She's more famous for her name on Elm Street, but she was in a bunch of shit. So she's a well-known name. Like think about, like, nowadays how, like, if anybody, like, does anything from whatever time period, it's, like, all over the news and Twitter and Facebook. Like, imagine if, like, let's say the kid from ALF, the little boy from ALF, like, not like today or tomorrow or whatever, like, he had to run across a freeway because his kid was running across the freeway and then starts acting weird. That would be like front page news. You got to think about that for a second.
And gets hit, like, by even, a car in the process.
Yeah, they establish in this movie that she's very well known and that, you know, she's famous enough to get like a limo to come to her house and take her to a talk show. And, you know, people, like, you know, yelling her name, and she's getting stalkers and stuff. So it's got to be a trip to see Heather Langenkamp running across the freeway, and you're braking, and then you're like, was that the chick that played Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street running across a freeway?
But it was also nighttime, and it was going pretty fast. I mean, like, you know,
No. I'm just saying, I just think it'd be funny if that happened. Like, just the thought of that happening in real life. I'm just like a famous person, and you're like, I almost just ran over Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street on this fucking freeway. Or
time,
you know,
to hit
whatever.
Twitter.
Yeah, like, let me go to Twitter. Let me Instagram this. Like, what the fuck?
And everybody be like, pics, or it didn't happen.
So. Because, you know, I think I was thinking about that this whole last half of the movie when they were like lecturing her about, you know, you're on drugs and we're going to get you help and whatever, right, whatever. And I'm just like nowadays thinking like, oh man, like Twitter would have a field day. Like,
well, not like, only that, but if you even go back, her husband dying.
Right, too,
would
that
be
too.
Huge. Her at the park with her son who falls off the top of the rocket.
Yes.
I mean, there are some pretty huge things that if, yeah, she had been such a big star, you think that the media would have surrounded it even more.
Yeah, I feel
but
like
we don't
they,
even really get the media presence in this movie.
I was gonna say, I feel like they downplay like media presence in this like so much. I feel like real life, you know, that would have happened, like, you know, Heather Langenkamp's son falls off a slide and we were there.
DHS see, like, looking the, into it. Yeah. Clickbait,
yeah, you
bullshit.
See like TMZ guys, like, you know, standing around talking like they always do, and like, oh yeah, by the way, Harvey, so yeah, you know the chick that played Nancy, you know what her son did the other day? And then they make jokes about Starbucks or something. I don't know.
I have no clue.
So then the movie takes an interesting turn where when she goes back to her house, John Saxon is there, and he's like, oh hey, the, you know, the kid's right there, he's okay, he's fine. And she's like, and he's like, are you okay? Like, you look like you've been through hell. And her hair is actually turning gray like Nancy's did in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the first movie. And then it switches. And then it's like very subtle. I don't know if you noticed it. It took a couple of like little nods before it full went on. Like, now it's a movie. Because he called her Nancy a couple of times before they went outside of the house. Because when she gets there, they, you know, she says John and he says Heather. But then throughout the rest of that scene, it's very subtle, but he calls her Nancy a couple of times. And he's like, you know, it's okay, Nancy. Let's keep him there. And I'm going to talk to you outside, Nancy. And then I'm like, huh, you know, and it's not like, you know, it was a mistake or anything, but it's very subtle. And then it's just like, wham, it just hits you where it's like, he's not John Saxon anymore. He's whatever his name was in the first movie. The
Sheriff
cop.
Thompson.
Sheriff Thompson. And
detective,
she's now Nancy. And
yeah,
to the point where their clothes even change, like, because he was just in normal, like, T-shirt and jeans. But then now he's wearing like a cop's uniform. He's got a cop car. And she's in pajamas all of a sudden. And then she realizes what's happening. And so she's like, okay, goodbye, daddy.
Yeah. And no, I didn't realize it until she said, why do you keep calling me Nancy? And he's like, that's your name. Why do you keep calling me John?
Yeah, it was, like it was yeah. very subtle, but I liked how they did that. Like, it was very just a subtle thing. And then it went to the Nightmare on Elm Street theme, and then her house turned into Nancy's house from the movie, and then she's like, okay, let's fucking do this. And so she goes into the house, but now the inside of it, sadly, was her house, not Nancy's house, but Heather's house. And I kind of wish that would have been like, the inside would have changed too. I thought that would have been really cool. Like, I don't know what your thoughts on that. It was because it was still her house inside.
Yeah, that would have been better. I think so.
Because, you know,
I hadn't thought about it, but now that you say something, I'm like, yeah, that would have made more sense if they were back in the movie world. Yeah, yeah. If they're back in the movie world. Yeah, that would make a lot more sense.
But no, it was still her house, and so she, you know, goes look for the kid, and there was this whole like Hansel and Gretel thing that kept coming up throughout the movie because he likes the story, and it kept popping up, and there was this thing about leaving breadcrumbs, and so he ends up leaving sleeping pills as breadcrumbs.
Yeah, the ones that he wasn't taking at the hospital to avoid sleeping. Yeah.
So he ends up leaving those because he gets taken by Freddy. And so she finds the pills lead up to his bed in his bedroom. And so she starts taking them. And then I start going into like Twitter mode again, where if like she overdosed, it'd be like, Heather Landenkamp overdosed on sleeping pills.
That's a lot of sleeping pills, Heather. You might want to slow down.
Right. But she then crawls through the sheets of the bed, because that was kind of like, that was another thing that kept popping up, was like, you know, the kid kept feeling this scary old man like underneath his sheets or whatever.
That sounds so terrible.
That does sound terrible. Yeah, that really, as I said it, I was like, that's a really terrible sentence. That's not what I meant. Can't take that one back. Yeah. But then, no, she ends up like falling through the sheets in another pretty cool practical effect. And then she falls through this like weird like 70s metal painting with all these like gargoyles and statues and waterfalls and fire and
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even like the boiler room of the other movies. It's just this weird like underground lair of just weird shit all over.
I mean, maybe it's supposed to be like the original Demon's Lair.
I suppose.
I don't know.
I suppose. And then we get the most, like, nonsensical ending. And I really felt like Wes did not know how to end this. Like, I felt like he wrote himself into a corner.
Didn't really end the first one very well either. It seems to be his M.O.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That is true. Yeah. Maybe he needs to get someone to write an ending. I don't know.
Well, he can't do it anymore, but yeah, well, back in the day.
Okay, yes, we all know what I meant.
Yes.
it's just weird. So, like, she shows up, and the kid's just there, and he's like, you know, yeah, he just let me go. And so then they're just together. Freddy shows up, you know, with his knife, starts attacking her, starts attacking the kid. She falls off this cliff and gets knocked out. The kid climbs into, actually, this kind of a boiler, actually, this little, like a little oven type. Actually, it was like the oven from Hansel and Gretel, basically.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, it does.
And so he, you know, he climbs into the oven, but like, you know, stays to the side so he's not like burnt or whatever. And then Freddy's like reaching out for him, trying to grab him. And then because he's Freddy Krueger, his arms extend.
Of course.
And starts, you know, reaching for him. And so then Heather I can call her Nancy, technically. Heather wakes up and, you know, then starts, like, trying to go after him. But the stairs turn into, like, mush, like, from the first movie. Mm-hmm. And then this attacks him. There's a snake that the kid like was. Did I miss a part? Did he like say he was afraid of snakes, or was that just a random thing?
I don't think so. I feel like that was just a random thing where the tongue turns into the snake.
Well, not though, before that, because the kid was trapped in the oven and he was trying to leave through this like little side door.
Oh yeah.
And then there was a snake there.
Yeah.
And then he looked like he was like overcoming a fear when he went through the door with the snake. But I was like, but he never said anything. Like, I felt like it would have been more of a thing if he was like, I hate snakes throughout the whole movie or something.
It may have been a deleted line. Or
yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's just, a general fear of Sammy.
I mean, I get that. I also don't like snakes. But
we legit found a snake skin in our garage over summer. I barely got the girls back in the garage the rest of the summer.
Ooh.
And then, but I mean, we left the snake skin there until it was time to decorate for Halloween. And my husband took it and hung it up on the front door.
Okay.
You got some pagan shit going on.
I guess so. Holy shit. Now, did you ever
and then,
find?
When we took all the stuff down for Halloween, my prissy 7-year-old wanted to keep it in her bedroom.
Really?
Yeah, and she did for a while, but it completely broke apart, and so I had to throw it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever find the snake?
Well, we did have one around. We live by a very heavily wooded area. It's not a wide area, but it's enough for all kinds of critters. We did have one that had, like a couple of weeks before, had almost fallen on Brad's head. It was like above the door going.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We have like a couple entrances to our garage, like the garage door and then some smaller doors off to like the back patio and stuff like that from the garage. And then he had opened that door to the patio and it was like above the door and it barely missed falling on him. And he tried to chase it out into the woods. We assume it's the same snake that did the skin, but he tried chasing it into the wooded area and it kept coming back to the house. So he permanently got rid of it.
Oh my God.
I don't want to say because then we'll get hit with animal cruelty, but we're pretty sure it's the same snake because we never saw another one. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was freaky.
I could not even deal with a snake falling on me.
Yeah.
As I'm walking through a door to my house or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
After we're done recording, I'll tell you the rest of the story. But
yeah, that's fine. God.
It barely missed hitting him on the head. I would have shit my pants. I mean, to be honest, I would have just lost all bowel control if a snake almost fell on my head.
Oh, fuck that.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay, I don't want to derail too much. I had a story about a rat, but I don't want to derail us too much.
Oh, okay. It's already a pretty long episode, but we'll talk more creepy crawlies later.
All right, we're almost done anyway. So the kid overcomes his fear of snakes, I guess, and breaks through this door, comes around, stabs Freddy, like, in the ass, I think.
It was hard to tell.
with the kitchen knife that Heather did bring with her.
Yes.
So it didn't just come out of nowhere. She did bring the kitchen knife with her. I am surprised how that knife stuck with her as she was falling through the bed.
70s painting.
Everything. Even she even like splashed into like water and shit. Like she still had that knife. Good grip on you, Heather. So they eventually, they get Freddy stuffed into the oven thing. Heather gets out, and then they like crank the heat up just a bit, which then causes Freddy to turn into the demon. I guess the demon revealed itself,
yeah,
and then exploded. And I'm like, but demons like fire?
Yeah. Or do they, though? Because they're always trying to escape hell and come to Earth.
True.
So,
I guess that's true. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this fire had holy water in it or something. I don't know.
I mean, maybe they don't like it. But they sure should, as hell, should be used to it. It shouldn't kill
right.
them.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. This is such a weird ending. I swear, Wes Craven just did not know how to end this thing.
Yeah.
But then they show back up in the bedroom, the kid's bedroom, and they're all like, "Yeah, we're safe." And then they find a script. She did find the script while she was in the lair. I forgot about that. But then the script followed her back to the real world, and it's the script of the movie we just watched. Like, it's every line that's in the script, because she flips through it, was like lines that was said and stuff that happened. And then she reads the beginning of the movie, which was the, you know, the guy making the robotic Freddy Claw, and then that's the end.
Yep.
So, Rachel, what did you think of Wes Craven's New Nightmare?
Well, I had high hopes because I thought the concept was extremely interesting of how Freddy came to life and started torturing the people involved in his movies.
Yeah.
Including the guy who played him, you know. I didn't know much other than that very basic concept. So I'm like, well, that's a really cool way to continue, especially when you have original people come back, the original writer and director, the original star. But I didn't like the way it was executed.
Mm-hmm.
Like we stated earlier, the whole mom angle is so old and so done to death. I mean, I know it was 26 years ago, so it's, but you know, even it, so you can't fault it as much for almost 3 decades later of me having to deal with it. But yeah, she was a very annoying character as herself, I guess. And it was slow to me. It was a very, slow. That's the only word I can, I mean, it's the longest one of all, because all of them have barely hit 90 minutes.
Yeah.
This one was, an hour and 50?
Almost 2 hours. Yes, it was. This is the longest movie in the series.
And it did not need to be that long at all. I felt like they were trying to drag it out or really hit home the whole Freddy coming out, the meta, that end. I mean, the end where she goes from the time that it flips and she thinks she's back in the movie to through the whole, you know, following Dylan and Freddy down into the whatever. That was long. The climactic ending was just very long to me. I mean, when you talk about it, it didn't seem that long, but while I was watching it, it felt really long. So, I'm sitting there like halfway through it looking like, okay, how much long? Okay, obviously this is near the end, but how much longer is this going to be? Because it just kept going. I just don't think it was very well done. I thought it was, for some reason, I thought it was going to be them on the set making the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then Freddy coming to life through that. So this was a letdown compared to my expectations. And I don't know why I thought that. I don't know if it's something in my brain remembering advertising and for some reason thinking or just making it up in my own head, knowing what the base of the story was. And just for some reason thinking they were making a movie. Well, because technically they were going to be making a movie anyway. I was let down. It wasn't horrible. It was definitely better than the last one. Because I really did not like Freddy's death. Yeah. I thought it was absolutely terrible. I had much higher hopes for it. And they just kind of fell into some old tropes that just let me down.
Oh, so what'd you rate it? I don't know if I
heard you say that. No, I didn't. Oh, yeah, I guess I could throw that out there. I would probably... I'm going to be generous and give it a 3.
Okay.
So, very right. Middle of the road. Great concept. Poor execution. Not horrible execution. Just poor execution. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good. I don't know what it is with doing this podcast with you, but I'm liking these more now than I did back when I watched them the first time. When we started this season, there were a lot of ones I was dreading, and the ones that I dreaded, I didn't hate as much. And I don't know if it's because my expectations got lowered and then they kind of went up, or I don't know what it was, or maybe I'm older, my taste changed. I don't know. But I didn't think this one as bad as it was when I first saw it. Because I kind of liked it a little bit more. Like, I agree with you. It's a little too long. I feel like they could have cut a couple of parts off that didn't need to be necessary. They could have... I wouldn't have minded if it was a different story. Like you said, it could have been on the set of the movie. Like, they were actually making the movie.
Yeah, and it was cursed or haunted by the demon that was inhabiting Freddy or whatever.
If they didn't focus on the kid too much.
Oh, God. So much of the hospital could have been cut out. I mean, sure, it's fun to make fun of how horrible the hospital was.
It was.
But so much of the hospital could have been cut out.
Yeah, that whole part with the doctor telling Nancy, we're going to take your kid to foster care and you need to go to rehab. And
yeah.
It was we didn't need that part. Although, albeit the part with the... the, you know, the two nurses, like, that made for a funny conversation. But there's a lot that could have been done. I'm actually gonna agree with you. I'm gonna give it 3 as well.
Okay.
I don't hate it, and I actually did enjoy it this time around. And, you know, I thought Freddy looked cool. I kind of liked his look in this movie. I know you didn't like it. It was fake looking to you, but...
It was, yeah.
But I thought he looked kind of cool. And, you know, it's kind of a shame that the next one in chronological order after this was the remake. No, sorry. That's not right. The Freddy vs. Jason, where they went back to the original look and stuff. Spoilers, I guess. They could have... I mean, I get kind of why they went back to the original look, because it was more of a popcorn-y movie than it was like a franchise lore film, I suppose. But yeah, with all that said, I didn't mind his look, and I thought he was a little more terrifying in this one, and the Julie getting killed in the hospital was pretty cool. And yeah, I don't know. I liked it. 3 stars.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm rambling. Okay. All right. That's it. That's our thoughts on Wes Craven's New Nightmare. So yeah, we are nearing the end of the show. We have 2 more left. Next time we are just gonna just get the remake over with, because holy hell, is that a hot mess. And I do not want to end this podcast on that note. I want to end on a happy note. So. We're going to go ahead and just jump to the remake, which is from 2010. And, Rachel, last I saw, it was on Netflix.
Really?
So you don't have to pay money for this one.
Cool.
So I'm hoping it's still on Netflix. I saw it there the other day. So hopefully by the time we get to it, you know, we'll you don't have to pay for it, hopefully.
It is on here. Nice.
So, yeah, there you go. And it is the one that I do not own, so I'm happy for that as well.
Oh, and I'm seeing that the Friday the 13th remake is on here now, too. I don't think it was.
Oh, really?
I don't think it was when we watched it months ago.
It definitely wasn't, no. Because I was trying to look out for you, and I did that a couple of months ago, but I didn't see any of the Nightmare on Elm Street on any free, well, quote-unquote free. You still pay for it, but like,
right.
you don't have to rent it.
Right. I haven't seen them either. I think Prime has a few of the Friday the 13th right now. They did.
Yeah. We'll be doing that in a couple of weeks. And boy, howdy, I cannot wait to talk about the remake.
Liar.
How about this? Have you ever seen any horror movie from the late 2000s, early 2010s?
Yeah.
That's just good. Just prepare for that.
Okay.
So, all right. That's going to do it for us. Rachel, thank you so much for doing this with me. I very greatly appreciate you doing this with me, as always. So, thanks.
You're welcome.
And to everyone else, we'll see you next time.